You are listening to BensTorah.com.
When it comes to the parshiyos of the Torah, usually they're put in some type of sequential order. They try to, if possible, be put in historical sequential order. But many times, based upon what Rashi says in the Chumash, Eimugdim Lucha B'Torah, what this teaches us is many times the Rabbanu Shalom put them in thematic order, where the theme of one parsha connects to the theme of the other parsha. And it just so happens that when it comes to this topic concerning the Egel Hazav and the construction of the Mishkan, this is a classical example that there is a thematic connection between the parshios of Kisisa, we're dealing with the Egel Hazav, and the parshios dealing specifically when it comes to Yaakov Pekudei, where we have the construction of the Mishkan taking place with all the various appurtenances, all the other kalim that were told to Moshe and to Klal Yisrael that they have to construct as part of the actual different types of furniture and different types of ritual objects that must be contained in the Mishkan itself. And what I want to take note of today, and I want to start off with, is the fascinating Talmud Yerushalmi from Shkolim, which will set the tone of today's shiur. I want to quote the Yerushalmi and get into the heart of this very, very quickly. The Talmud Yerushalmi says in Masechet Shkolim the following statement. Tani Rav Yosef and Rav Chanina, the following braisa was said by Chazal. And what is the braisa? Vasisa kaparazov tahar. You should basically make for the kaparis the ark cover, which is called the kaparis. It should be made of pure gold. Ubozov shel kaparis, and the gold of the top piece of the Aron HaKodesh, the kaparis, yechaper al zavel shel egel. We will kaper on the gold used to manufacture the actual golden calf. So in the context of the actual statement of the shir today, I wrote, what is the conceptual analysis and conceptual connection between the Egel Hazav and between the actual golden Aron HaKodesh, the actual golden ark? Both were made of gold. Both were made for supposedly spiritual purposes. And for some reason, Chazal are emphasizing in Talmud Yerushalmi Shkolim that the actual manufacture of the specific Aron HaKodesh made of gold with the golden kaparas on top of the Keruvim is the ultimate kapara for the head of the Egel Hazav. What I want to do today is share with you what is the rationale behind this. One of the great gedolim of earlier generations, the name is Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, who happens to be the past Lashi Yeshiva of the Volozhiny Yeshiva. He happens to be the father of the famous Rav Chaim of Brisk, spent a lot of time in his Sefer Beis Halevi trying to give us the actual meaning of this Talmud Yerushalmi Masechta Shkolim and to show how the actual construction of the Aron HaKodesh ends up being the ultimate kapara for Klal Yisrael when it comes to the Egel Hazav. So listen very carefully as I formulate the entire concept articulated by the Beis Halevi, the Rav Yosef Chaim Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. In fact, he is the person after whom my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Dov was named after. He was named after his great-grandfather. And this is part of the Brisk Alumdus in analyzing even Medavashi Chazal, not only halachic text. These are the questions that are posed. And listen very carefully, and by the time I finish, how you'll understand this man of Chazal with tremendous understanding. When it comes to the fact of the Egel Hazav, there are many, many questions that are posed, but I want to pose right now the basic six questions that are mentioned by Chazal in trying to comprehend what happened over here when it came to the chet of this Egel Hazav in Parshas Kisisa. The first major question everybody has is based upon the following. When Klal Yisrael, ultimately speaking, came to the point in time that they made the Egel Hazav, they had experienced for a long period of time various miracles, which by definition should have precluded any attempt to make an idolatrous golden calf to take the place of Moshe, to take the place of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Chazal looked upon the generation of Lev Mitzrayim, they called them the Dardaya, the Dar that was given incredible knowledge of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and what he is capable of. And I'll give you examples of this. When it comes, for instance, to the Makos, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu inflicted the Mitzrayim in for a 12-month period, as the mission says in Masechtas Eidos, the purpose of having a plague per month lasting an entire year with all the Esamakos is explained by the Ramban, explained by the Abarbanel in their respective treatises as serving a definitive functionality. And what was that functionality? When Moshe Rabbeinu came and he made the demand on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send Klal Yisrael out and allow them to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Midbar at a certain time in a certain place, if you remember, when Moshe says, Kama Hashem Sholach Esami V'Yachugi Li B'Midbar, Paro made three definitive statements. Number one, he said, Mi Hashem, who is this Hashem? Chazal said that statement shows he was kofar, Be'ikar. He said, I don't recognize God as one of the authorized gods that are in my encyclopedia of deities of our generation. God's names are mentioned. I will recognize that this God exists. He then said, that I should listen to God, to think that God hears me and I hear God, and there is some type of divine providence, some knowledge of God, Hashgachas God, that you're talking about when it comes to interaction with human beings directly. I'm not listening to this God. There can't be such a Hashgacha Prat as you're describing. And finally, Paro said, I'm basically going to defy the entire request you made. I don't believe there is such a God. I don't believe that God has any type of omnipotent divine power to basically punish Egypt and Paro in particular as being the superpower of the world at that point in time. In that point in time of world history, Egypt was the most sophisticated technological society in the world, the most powerful military power. When it came to Kishuv, when it came to dealing with all the tumos that existed in the world, when it came to idolatry, it was the height of all the idolatrous societies that existed. So he says, I'm not worried about the omnipotence of your God. I don't believe it exists, and it surely can't count to us. I'm not worried about being punished by God. He was called for the concept of Schave Onish, of the omnipotence of God. The Abarbanel is very specific, as well as the Ramban, to say that the purpose of Makos was not only punitive, as normally as it's interpreted, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before he punished the Egyptians and the world at large, felt that they should not be Tinokish and Ishmael saying, we don't know about this God, we were never educated by this God, they should have a teretz not to be punished. So he gave them a year's lesson in theology, 1.1, of who the Ribbono Shel Olam is, and he demonstrated who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by the implementation of the Makos. The way the Makos were orchestrated is the actual Hasra about the Makos was for 3 weeks, the Medrash says, Rashi quotes it, and 1 week the actual Makos lasted when it came to implementation. Now, what we have over here is the following. The great Abarbanel goes even further than the Ramban and points out that I'm going to show you how the 10 Makos, the way they're divided, literally were a rebuttal argument to all the rejections made by Paro. If you look at every published Haggadah, which we're going to be using in a couple of weeks, when it comes to the Esa Makos, which the Haggadah describes, usually the format of the Makos is basically divided into three groups. You have Dan, Sodei, Kinim in one line. You then have Arav, Dan, Avishkin in the next line. And then you have Bobed, Arav, Chayshik in the third line, together with Makos Becharos. Comes along the great Abarbanel, and he says, what I want you to know is the reason that Rabbi Yehuda gave Simonim, which are quoted in the Haggadah, the Tzak, Adash, V'Achav, after you have all the 10 Makos listed, is to tell you they're grouped in three, and each one of the groups had a specific purpose. When it comes to Dan, Savadei, Kinim, if you look in the Flemish, these Makos are prefaced by the statement, Bezos Teda Kani Hashem. If Paro says, Mi Hashem, I don't believe there is such a God, after they receive and triplicate three makos, which take 3 months, done, survey the kinim, they will come to the conclusion, as the Chatzun Paro did, Etzba Lokimi, there is a God of the Jews of Israel. They just did something in kinim we cannot replicate. This is some type of divine deity that has powers more powerful than us when it comes to doing this magic. So they started recognizing and telling Paro, we better realize there is a God that Moshe mentioned. When it came to the concept of initiates of Hashlach HaProtis of Hashem, before Arav, Deborah, Vishchin, the Torah says, L'man Hashem Teda, Ki Ani Hashem V'Kerev Haaretz, I'm God not only in heavens above, but I know everything going down on earth. I'm a Mashgiach B'Tachtonim, there's divine providence, there's Idias Hashem. And the purpose of Arav, Deborah, Vishchin was to show you can have an Egyptian and Israeli Jew next to each other, living in abodes, which are a couple of feet away, and when these specific makas were implemented, the only people being hurt by them would be the Egyptians and their household and their specific domicile. The Jews who are living next door would see no problem from Arav Deborah Vishchin because of Hashem's Hashgacha Pratis, which he demonstrated with these three makas. This, therefore, is a rejection of what Paro says, Asher Eshma Bekalo, his rejection of Hashgacha Pratis. The Egyptians now see there is Hashgacha Pratis. And when it came to Bogad Ad Befeshu Gemachas Beforos, it's prefaced in the Torah with the following expression, Bavor Teda, Ki Ein Kamoni Bechol Ha'aretz. When you experience these last four makos, you'll realize there's nobody in the world, no divine entity that you talk about that has the omnipotence, the divine all-powerfulness of the God of Israel. And therefore, the Yicholos Hashem, the omnipotence, the powerfulness of God to punish those who deserve punishment and reward those who deserve reward is therefore something HaKadosh Baruch Hu can orchestrate. Nobody can stop, even Paro and Egypt cannot stop. And the Makkah B'Patish was Makkah B'Fonos. When Paro saw his own son that was being guarded by thousands of different soldiers from all around, protecting any harm from coming to his son, when 12 o'clock hit, on the night of the 15th, and his son died, Paro realized he was finished, that nothing could stop this God, and that's why he ran after Moshe and Aaron throughout the streets to tell them, I'm basically giving up, you wanted me to let you go, and letting you go, go out of Mitzrayim, up until now the Medrash says, you're Avdei Paro, from this point on, you're Avdei Hashem, a very famous Medrash Chazal. So these Makos themselves basically gave us the ability to understand, at not least Klal Yisrael, but the Egyptians and the world at large, there is a Ribbono Shelem in this world. Number two, this God has divine providence. He knows everything that's going on the face of this earth between one human being and another human being. And God has divine omnipotence, divine all-powerfulness. No force on the face of this earth can stop HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the first Yedias Hashem that the Jews, as well as the world at large, experienced on a personal basis from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But it didn't stop over there. When the Jews left Mitzrayim, they saw more miracles of Hashem in their supervision. They got Man Min Hashemayim, that a rolling bear Mayim that was rolling with them that gave water to millions and millions of Jews who were wandering in the Midbar. They had Anadi HaKavod that was surrounding them on all six sides, protecting them from the environment. When they experienced this, they saw the Yad Hashem in a super miraculous way. When they came to Kriyas Yamsuf afterwards, and Hashem split the sea not into one part, but in 12 different parts, and the Mitzrayim came in afterwards, and the Jews were saved from drowning in the Yam, and all the major parts of the Egyptian Empire war machine were drowned in the water, 1, 2, 3. They saw the miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu changing natural law, splitting the Yam into 12 parts and then drowning the Egyptians when the Jews got out of the water. I mean, these are tremendous miracles. They experienced themselves. They saw the Kisah Kavod, Mashiroa Shifka Liyam, when it comes to the Kisah Kavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu floating in the environment above their heads. Chazal say, with even a Shifkas Torah, let alone the rest of the Jews, Mashalonach Heskel Bambuzi, the mice in Merkava, they experienced it with their own eyes. They saw it with their own essence, their own being. And finally, the Makkah B'Patish, when they came to Eretz of the place of the High Sinai, and they are Har Sinai, were able to see in a short period of time when it came to the Aseres HaDibros. What were they able to see? They were able to experience HaKadosh Baruch Hu addressing them personally, Panim al Panim. The Tshuvas HaRashba mentions, if you want to know how powerful the communication was to Klal Yisrael, he points out that the Rabban Hashem momentarily gave Klal Yisrael, who at that time had undergone such a purity process of 49 days, Pasach V'Amasam, they were so pure, they reached the concept of Kedusha and purity, Kotun to the Chet of Adam V'Chave, as the Zohar says, as the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos. In schus of this, Hashem gave them the actual ability, as Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave them prophetic tenets, to be able to hear Hashem speak to them, Panim el Panim, to be able to hear Hashem speak to Moshe Rabbeinu, and direct Moshe Rabbeinu, the very tzivuyim that he wanted them to give to Klal Yisrael. They heard the whole conversation from beginning to end. The Tshuvas Rashba said the reason Hashem wanted them to hear that, to experience the Aseres HaDibros directly being given to by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem speaking to them, speaking to Moshe in a direct fashion, was in order for Klal Yisrael to see finally the nemanis, the truthfulness of Moshe Emes or Terasa Emes, that he was the Shliach sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the purposes of redeeming them, and all the messages that Hashem had given them through Moshe Rabbeinu, for Emes Lahabito. The Torah says, on experiencing Har Sinai, and the way Klal Yisrael experienced it, hearing Hashem speak to them, was the key of the Pasuk, Ubecha Yaminu Le'olam. The belief in the emanus of Moshe Rabbeinu will be fulfilled by them hearing the actual statements of the Aseres HaDibros and all the information being given them directly. They're able to hear it, they're able to experience it, and from that specific point in time, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa, which is quoted later on Parshas Veschanan, that Klal Yisrael have to take the experience of Maimon Har Sinai and transfer it from generation to generation, that this in fact did happen. 3 million men, women, and children did stand at Har Sinai. Hashem spoke to them directly. They heard the Aseres HaDibros. They heard the authorization. The Moshe Rabbeinu was the only Navi Hashem gave the permission to transfer Torah to Klal Yisrael on a prophetic level. They heard it all. And therefore, the mitzvah of transferring it from generation, giving us over as a personal history lesson from parent to child, the concept not only doing that, but the concept as well, besides that, of Lo Yishkat, that we should not forget Maimon Har Sinai and make sure this is a living tradition that exists with Klal Yisrael to the end of time. That was the final, ultimate proof that Hashem exists, we exist, Klal Yisrael exists as the Abba Nivchar, Moshe is the Navi of Hashem. That only applies to Klal Yisrael. Even Moshe had a tzivui to repeat the Umas Olam, as the Rambam says when he came down from Har Sinai, the Eschaivis of the Zaynissus B'nai Noach. All of this was taught to us on a realistic level, on a high prophetic level. So the obvious question everybody asks, after experiencing all of this, the makos and the miracles of the month and everything else, and Kriyas Yamsuf, and culminating with Maimon Har Sinai, how is it possible if Moshe didn't come back in 40 days and 40 nights? All of a sudden they should say, forget about him, forget about Hashem, and we're going to make an Egel Hazav, a golden calf, to worship that instead of God? It's impossible to comprehend that. It's impossible to understand conceptually, intellectually, theologically. How in the world can Klal Yisrael come to such a decision and rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu on such a terrible, terrible level? I mean, it's incomprehensible. And I'll tell you, the Kuzari says in his Sefer, Yehuda Levi, that the biggest kashas the Umas Olam throw upon us is how in the world, if you're such an Amaninka, and you had supposedly such a revelation, how did you rebel against your God and make a golden calf? It's been the biggest critique of Klal Yisrael that the Umas Olam who aided us threw in our face, going back for thousands and thousands of years. So this is the first major question I'm posing. The second major question I'm posing is the following. Aaron HaKohen, if you read the Pesukim in Parshas Ki Sisra, we just read it this past week, you can't forget, he seemed to be instrumental in taking the gold and everything they brought, putting it through the fire, and it seems he was involved in constructing the Egel HaZav. Now, the Egel HaZav was the fountain of Eidah Zarah. Aaron was involved in helping construct it. The problem is, we have a Gemara Menachas that tells us the following halacha. The Gemara Menachas tells us, any Kohen throughout the generations that involve themselves in idolatry on any level can never ever, even if they do tshuva gemurah, tshuva biava, can never serve in the Beis Hamikdash as a Kohen again. But guess what? We got a major problem over here. What's the major problem? When Hashem finally forgave Klai Yisrael, so lofty kidnapped Afar. Not that only Aaron had the ability to serve as a Kohen, but he was appointed the Kohen Gadol. How is that possible? If he was involved in idolatry, Gemara Menachas says he should be possible to be even a Pashtun Kohen, let alone a Kohen Gadol. How do we reconcile that specific phenomenon? Question number three. When Moshe was told by Hashem, plead as a lawyer on behalf of Klal Yisrael, be mevakesh rachamim, try to plead for them to not be destroyed. What did Moshe say to Hashem? He said to Hashem, Ki amcha hagoy hagadol hazeh, Ribbono shalom, this is your great nation. This is your great Klal Yisrael. It's a goy hagadol. So everybody asks the question, a goy hagadol has the chutzpah, the audacity to rebel against God and make an egel hazav to replace him and replace Moshe Rabbeinu. What was the limud chus that he gave to Hashem, Ki amcha goy hagadol hazeh? And what's interesting is what was Hashem's response to him. What Hashem said, ultimately speaking, to Moshe Rabbeinu, upon hearing this specific statement, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Salachti kidavareko. I heard your limud tzchus. I heard what you said to try to explain why Klal Yisrael should not be punished. I agree to your argument, and I'm going to forgive them. What's going on over here? They worship the Egel HaZav. What was the limud tzchus of Moshe? Ki amcha gadol hazeh. And Hashem says, I accept it. Let's continue. Another question. Chazal say that the building of the Mishkan v'Kelav, all of the Hayakil v'Kudai, served ultimately speaking as a kapara for the Egel HaZav. What is the Mishkan's construction had to do with the kapara of Egel HaZav? And the Medrash Chazal I start off this year with today. And of all the kelim contained in the Mishkan, the construction of the Oven HaKadosh, the golden Oven HaKadosh, that was contained in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the holiest inner sanctum of the Mishkan, the gold of that keli is the chapa, the gold that was used for the Egel HaZav. What does the Oven HaKadosh have to do with the Egel HaZav? How is it a kapara? How does it take care of the problem? So these are all the questions that were posed, and the great Gadol of Yoshidov HaLevi Salav Eichek, the famous Beis HaLevi, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Valajani Yeshiva, the last Rosh Yeshiva, gives a pshat I'm sharing with you today that I wanted you to listen to. I know for a fact, because I've given this share many times over the years, most people don't know what I'm going to be telling you now, but I want you to listen very carefully, because when you hear what I have to say, and you hear exactly what is the lundis, what is the conceptual analysis of what Klal Yisrael did, and why they did what they did, and why Aaron participated, and all the events that took place. When you hear what this Rav Soloveitchik says, it's going to change your mind entirely in interpreting the psukim, what really went on, and will explain all the questions I posed in the last couple of minutes. So the following is my rendition of what the Beis HaLevi says. Listen very carefully as piece by piece he comes along and gives the answers to these specific questions. Question number one. How could the Dor HaDeah, who saw all that they saw, want to replace HaKadosh Baruch Hu with an idolatrous golden calf? Does that make sense? Is that logical? So says the Beis HaLevi the following. Very carefully listen to what he says. There's no question, the Beis HaLevi says in my mind, that after all Klal Yisrael experienced, the overwhelming majority of Klal Yisrael, 95% plus, had no desire if Moshe did not come back to replace God and Moshe Rabbeinu with an idolatrous object. Chas v'shalom, you should say that upon Klal Yisrael.
You are so listening that's the to case. Ben's Torah.
What was the bakasha the Klal Yisrael had to Aaron HaKohen? Let's make something to replace. What were they replacing? So says the Beis HaLevi, if you look very carefully, among Moshe's functional duties that he served from the time he accepted the mission Hashem gave him, Pasha Shemos, all the way through to the end of Moshe's life, what was the major functionality of Moshe when it came to Hashem and Klal Yisrael? What he was ultimately the medium of communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. Anytime Hashem had a request from Klal Yisrael, he went to Moshe and said, Moshe, tell Klal Yisrael such and such in my name. When Klal Yisrael wanted to communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klal Yisrael approached Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe went, and prophetic vision, communicated directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, asking the request on behalf of Klal Yisrael what they desire to have and know when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe was the divine communicative device that Hashem had created from the beginning of his mission to serve as the conduit, the communication device that communicated between Klal Yisrael and Hashem and Hashem and Klal Yisrael. This was a major functional role. It came to such a point that Klal Yisrael have in Medrash Kozal that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaver b'tol grono shel Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe spoke to Klal Yisrael, it was as if Hashem is addressing them directly. And what this means, the way the Rishonim interpret it, when Klal Yisrael are given the prophetic utensils on Har Sinai, as I mentioned before, in the name of Rashba, to hear Hashem directly speak to them, on this specific speaking to them by Hashem, Hashem created a voice that represented the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was became indelibly impacted in their brain. This is what Hashem's voice sounds like. Later on, after Maimon Har Sinai, and the communication went from Hashem to Moshe, Moshe to Hashem, or vice versa, when Hashem was speaking and telling Moshe to say something, Hashem made Moshe's voice momentarily, when he gave over the commands of God, to sound like the same exact voice Klal Yisrael heard the Kadosh Baruch Hu address them with when Hashem gave them the Aseres the Dibros on Har Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the Daber, mitad Grodosh Moshe. That's how they knew it was Hashem speaking to them, not merely Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was a very powerful communicative device, a vehicle that gave the Ratzon Hashem and the Sivuim to Klal Yisrael and from Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They said to Mato Aaron, if Moshe is no longer here to serve as this conduit, what's going to happen to us? If Hashem doesn't make you, Aaron, the communicative device, what are we supposed to do? So now comes part two. Comes along the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi says the following. After Klal Yisrael had gone and saw all the revelations of the Makas of Mitzrayim and the Nisim of the Midbar, and especially Kriyas Yamsuf, and they were able to have the schus of seeing the Ma'aser Merkava that's described by Yechezkel and Yeshayahu and their Nevuos hovering over them in the process of supervising and making sure that all the miracles, especially Kriyas Yamsuf, took place exactly the way the Rabbi Hashem wanted it to take place. Chazal say they were able not only to hear there was a Kisei HaKavod and the Ma'aser Merkavah, they were able to see it on a prophetic level. Everybody was there. Even a Shifka was able to see it. Chazal tell us that experience of Klal being raised to the level, being able to see the Ma'aser Merkavah meant they had reached a very high spiritual level of understanding, communication, and connectivity to the Ribono Shel Olam Kavod Ma'atzmo. They said to Aaron, and Aaron and them discussed it, let's figure out what we can do to make a replacement object, a medium, that Hashem could communicate with us, and we could communicate with Hashem. So they made the following calculation, which is unique and distinct. Listen very carefully. When it came to the Kisei HaKavod, the Ma'aser Merkavah, Chazal tell us, based upon Kabbalah and other sources, it was surrounded on four sides by four different figurines. There's a figure of a human being, Chazal say, it was a figurine representing Yaakov Avinu. There was a lion representing the lion kingdom and all of the Chayos. There was an eagle representing the bird kingdom. And there was a shar representing the behemoths, all the behemoths on the face of this earth, each one in a different side of the four sides of the Maisa Merkava. They saw with their Ruach HaKodesh that they were heading in the northern direction towards HaSinai, and they saw that the figurine on the Kisei HaKavit of the Maisa Merkava that was facing the north was the shar. Was the shah they saw on the Maisim and Kav above in Ruach HaKodesh that they possessed. So they and Aaron decided, if the Maisim and Kav is the community of the vice Hashem has in Shemayim on a macro level, maybe we should replicate this on a macro level. The macro level is the Kisak covered in Shemayim. The micro level would be to take one of the figurines, in this case the shah, and make a communicative device from the shahr, in which Hashem will communicate to us down here below, and we'll be able to communicate Hashem. This will serve as a medium of communication between us and Hashem. Not to serve as an idol to worship, not to reject Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah, to be a communicative device, a microform of the Kisei HaKavod of the Maisim HaKavod. But instead of making a shahr on the macro level, I made on a micro level, a calf, a baby shahr, to represent the Maisa Mekavah Shalmaila. Says the Beis HaLevi, if this was their Kavanah, unlike the way it's interpreted, was L'Shem Shemayim. They wanted to maintain their connectivity with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wanted to use the Ruach HaKodesh and the Kedusha they possess by experiencing all that experience from Makos and Kriyas Yam Suf and all the other Giluyim and Ani HaKavayit, to try to do something on a high spiritual plane, to maintain their connectivity between themselves and Hashem, to make a communicative device between us and HaKadosh Baruch from both directions. The Maisa, therefore, of the Egel Hazah, which Aaron participated, was done for 95% of the people, purely L'Shem Shamayim, to try to communicate with Hashem with a communicative device. It was made of gold because of the concept of Zekei Livan Meyu. And I want to tell you a secret. If you think about it for a couple of minutes, Tamidim and Tamidites, what was the ultimate communicative device Klai Yisrael had in the Midbar? It was a golden utensil as well. The golden utensil was the Ark, the Aron HaKodesh, with Kruvim on top of it. When Hashem communicated to Moshe in both directions, Hashem says, Na'adikla, I'm going to go down to the Mashrina, to the Kodesh HaKodashim. I'm going to communicate to you from on top of the Aron HaKodesh, from Beit HaKeruvim. That call is going to go prophetically to Moshe Rabbeinu to bring him divine messages to Klal Yisrael. And if Moshe wants to communicate with Hashem, he's going to go into the Mishkan and speak in the Kodesh HaKodashim outside, communicate to Hashem to send messages of Klal Yisrael to the Ribbono Shalom. So the Aron HaKodesh, made of gold, with figurines of Kedushim, ultimately became the communicative device between Hashem and Klal Yisrael for 40 years plus. So the obvious question that the Beis HaLevi asks, if making a communicative device of gold with figurines, modeling after the macro, the Maisa Merkava, on a micro level down here, what was sacrilegious by them making a golden calf for that specific functionality? Why is that worse than making an Aron Kodesh that also has figurines, that's also being used as a communicative device? Why is this one better than the other one? Why did Hashem get so angry? Why were they accused of committing Avodah Zarah? So comes along the Beis HaLevi, and the Beis HaLevi says the answer is the following. When it comes to the Issa of Avodah Zarah, there are two types of Avodah Zarah we have in the world of Halacha. One is hardcore idolatry, which you just read Tanakh, all the idols and everything they did, what they worshipped, you name it, they worshipped God of the wood, God of the mountains, God of the river. They had multiple gods they deified as representing the natural phenomenon in the universe itself. The stars, the constellations, the sun, the moon, everything became a god for them. The fact of the matter is that Klal Yisrael themselves did not want to make anything that relates to any of these specific phenomena. What Klal Yisrael wanted to do is to make a spiritual media representing the Maisa Merkava above, the Maisa Merkava below, to communicate to Hashem. This was their Kavanah. But the problem, the Beis HaLevi says, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, there are two types of Avodah Zarah. One is actual idols, but there's another Avodah Zarah. When you start to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu and make up with your own mind, your own brain, your own heart, new types of spiritual worship of Hashem, new types of objects with which we worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you make objects of spiritual worship of God, or different types of spiritual ceremonies or prayers to worship God. If these activities you do were created by you, by yourself, with your own imagination, as great as your imagination might be, but they were never commanded by Hashem for you to make these types of utensils, never made this communicative device, not to make these types of prayers or prayer services or activities of thy worship of God. You did it with your own brilliant genius, your own Ruach HaKodesh, who were never commanded. This is called, in the world of Halakha, Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah means unauthorized divine worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you worship Hashem through utensils that were never commanded, or spiritual activities, or prayers which Hashem never authorized, that is a technical form of Avodah Zarah, unauthorized divine worship of God, which is also a form of Avodah Zarah, and Yechayiv Misa for having done such. Later on, Rachmanu Litzlan, when the Bebeonim of Aaron HaKohen brought incense, Keteris, into the Kodesh Kedoshim, L'Shem Shemayim, the Torah calls it Eish Zarah, unauthorized divine burning of Keteris to Hashem, they were Chayiv Misa, because they violated this crime again. They have no right to make up their own Ketores burning to Hashem. Only if Hashem authorized it was it halachically permissible to do this. So therefore, if that's the case, Aaron and Klal Yisrael did this L'Shem Shemayim, but they were mistakenly thinking they could do it with their own brilliant genius without being commanded by God. God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, they committed the technical Isa of Avodah Zarah, unauthorized by worship of God, the Chayiv Misa. What was Moshe's answer to Hashem? Don't look what they did. Look at the motivation of what they did. Then you do it to rebel against you, to rebel against Moshe, to rebel against the Torah. They did it L'Shem Shemayim to communicate to you, to connect to you once again, if Moshe was no longer here. If that's the case, they did it L'Shem Shemayim. They might have been mistaken, but they did it L'Shem Shemayim. When Hashem heard what Moshe said, that in fact they did it L'Shem Shemayim, it was Malai Mitzvos. What did Hashem say to Moshe? So Alachti Kidavarecha. Moshe, I hear the Hezber. I hear the lawyer's case you're making on their behalf. Let's look in the Panemius. Let's look in the mind of Aaron. Let's look in the mind of 95% of Klal Yisrael. They did it L'Shem Shemayim. They were mistaken in the principle that you can do it yourself and manufacture your own means of Avodas Hashem. That mistake they made. But they did this L'Shem Shemayim. And for the reason I'm going to forgive them, I'm not going to destroy them. They can do tshuva. The 3,000 people that were killed, Chazal say, were the Erev Rav who made the Egozab into a real Avodah Zarah, a real idol. The same idols they worship in Egypt, they made the Egozab into a real idol. That's why they were killed. And the Levim killed them at the behest of Hashem. They were Chai Misa for committing real Avodah Zarah. But the rest of Klal Yisrael were not the Erev Rav, meant to do L'Shem Shemayim. Hashem therefore said to them, Salafti Kidavereka, I'm forgiving them based upon the way you're explaining the Mashavas of all of Klal Yisrael, they did L'Shem Shemayim. That's why when it came to Aram, he never worshipped real idols. He never was puzzled, as the verse says in Ma'arach House, and because he never worships a real idol, he's puzzled for the Avodah forever. He met the L'Shem Shemayim as to create a vehicle to communicate with the Rabbi Mishalom. That's why he was allowed to function as a Kayan. And that's why he was given the schus not just to be a Kayan, to become the Kayan Gadol. In actuality, Rabbi Isai, when you think about this for a couple of minutes, what I want to point out to you, that if that's the case, we therefore see that all the questions I posed before are basically answered. When it comes to the Dardeya, they made the Lashem Shemayim to create a vehicle to connect to Hashem. When it comes to 3,000 who were killed, those are 3,000 of the Erevav, who did this Lashem Avodah Zarah Mamish. When it comes to Aaron and Klal Yisrael, there was no punishment of preventing them from later on being HaKohen and Kohen Gadol, because he did a Lashem Shemayim to connect to Hashem. Hashem said to Moshe, Salachti to the Rechah, Ki Avachai, Goy Gadol, Zeh, they are Goy Gadol. They wanted to connect to your Ribbono Shalom. They wanted to be Oved Hashem. They didn't want to forsake the Ribbono Shalom. But now we come to the final phenomenon. Why is it that the building of the Mishkan, and why is it that the Oven HaKadosh, this is a crucial thing, why is it that this is the ultimate kapara for the Egel Hazav? Why the Vayaku Bekudei come right after Pashas Kisisa? And why is it that after every part of the creation of the Mishkan, it says, Kashat Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. Look at Pashas Bekudei. Everything they made was made the way Hashem was Mitzava Moshe to Klal Yisrael to manufacture this specific part of the Mishkan. Whether the Mishkan, the Kelim, the Bekudim, everything was done Kashat Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. So it comes along the Beis HaLevi. When the Beis HaLevi says, if you want to understand this, let's look at the configuration of the Aron HaKodesh, which according to the Yerushalmi I start off the class with, represents the ultimate kapara of the Chet of the Egel Hazav. What they point out, if you look very carefully, when it comes to the construction of the actual Aron HaKodesh, is the Torah says the following. What is the Aron HaKodesh? Vayash le'kruvim zov miksha se'asam. When it came to the golden cover of the Aron, it was a piece of gold, but it had carved out from it, kruvim from the actual gold itself. They weren't attached later on, but they were carved out from the piece of gold. They were put on the k'saris ha'kaporis on both sides, kruvim from izah, kruvim from izah. And the kaporis itself, therefore, had two kruvim coming off from the top of the golden cover. But listen to this. If you could imagine, the kruvim were facing each other from both sides of the Aron HaKodesh, panim el panim. The faces were facing a little bit, looking down on the top of the Aron. The wings were basically raised above, but they were facing each other. And the obvious question is, everything that was built in the Mishkan, all of the Kelim, had symbolic meaning and significance. Why, says the Beis HaLevi, with the kruvim facing each other? What was the symbolism of their faces looking downward to the top of the Aron HaKodesh? Why is it that Hashem picked the Aron HaKodesh later on in the Kodesh HaKadoshim to be the ultimate, the consummate vehicle with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu addressed Klal Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu in the 40 years plus that they were in the Midbar? What's the symbolism of it? So says the Beis HaLevi very simply, listen to us very carefully. What we have over here is the following. Inside the Aron HaKodesh beneath, based upon the Gemara and Baba Basra, it had multiple contents. It had the Lukos contained inside. It had the Sefer Tefer Rishon that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote for Klal Yisrael before he passed away. So therefore, it was the receptacle of the Aron HaKodesh of the Lukos and the Torah Shebichtav contained in the Chamisha from Sheteira. The actual Talmud Yerushalmi in Shekalim, if you look at it, points out that the Lukos were not just Lukos. Hashem had very small writing contained all over the Lukos on all sides, and that specific writing contained the secretive information of Torah Shebaal Peh explaining the Aseres HaDibros and expanding it to all of the Tayyak Mitzvahs and all the derises that would be derived from the Torah in all future generations. The Luchos therefore represent that not only the Torah Shel Nitzav, but Torah Shel Ba'al-Peh, and all of the Mesorot we're going to have concerning the application of Torah for thousands of generations to come till the end of time. So the Aron HaKodesh was the receptacle of Kol HaTorah Kula. The Kruvim were facing each other. The symbolism says the Beis HaLevi is to show the divine providence, the Hashgacha Pratis, that exists between that Kodesh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, looking at one crew represented Hashem, the other crew represented Klal Yisrael. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, the Pasuk says, Einei Tomit El Hashem. When it comes to Hashem, looking at Klal Yisrael, the Pasuk says, Ein Hashem El Yiveyav. They were looking at each other, showing the Hashgacha Pratis of Klal Yisrael looking to Hashem, and Hashem looking to Klal Yisrael. It's a relationship. A divine providence, Hashgacha Pratis. But Hashem says, I want Klal Yisrael to understand this relationship. Why are my Keruvim facing each other, looking downwards to the top of the Aron HaKodesh? It's to teach Klal Yisrael, if you want to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you want to understand what Hashem wants from us in every level of our life, spiritually, physically, and otherwise, if you want to know how to relate to Hashem, to be Davik to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can't dream it up yourself, Kindalach. You have to look as the Kruvim are looking in the Torah content of Torah Shevetzav, Torah Shevabeth, that's right underneath the golden kaparis cover. When you look at the Torah Shevetzav, Torah Shevabeth, and you learn the Halakha Hashgafa, and the great Yesaidavs, Kabbalistically, of what that teaches us, that teaches us by Sidbar how to use mitzvahs to connect to Hashem on a such a level that the Hashgacha Pratis should reach the highest level possible. Only if you use Torah as the means, the tzivuyim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to relate to Hashem, then you'll be able to do mitzvahs and Torah properly, and you'll reach your spiritual ecstasy in this world and the world to come. That is why when the Mishkan was built, Pasha Tekudei, you can read it this week's Pasha, it says after each part of the Mishkan, Kashat Tzivah Hashem is Moshe. This Betzala, Chazal say Betzal Kel Ha'isa, had incredible Ruach HaKodesh, incredible spiritual capacities. He was able to figure out the osios, the letters of the ancient Torah, Hashem is Mestatim Baraisa Bar Allah. He could have tried to recreate, on some level, the recreation of the universe. But he never did that, Chas V'Shalom. He's not the Rebbeinu Shalom. He understood it, but he wasn't going to do it. But one thing he was able to do, if he had wanted to, he could have enhanced the Mishkan with his Ruach HaKodesh and knowledge of Kabbalah to make the Mishkan even more powerful, even a greater vehicle of communication. But he didn't do that, because he learned his lesson with the rest of Klal Yisrael. If he did it of his own accord, then it would have been Avodah Zarah, unauthorized by worship of Hashem. The Torah therefore gives us Eidus Ne'amana, that when the Mishkan was built, every part, the tent itself, the Mishkan itself, all the Kalim, and all the other appurtenances that we use in the Mishkan and the Avodu itself, it was Kashat Tziva Hashem Esmosha. Klal Yisrael learned their lesson. You want to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Torah and Mitzvahs. It's only Torah and Mitzvahs, Hashem Tziva Hashem Esmosha, the Moshe gave to us as authorized by worship of Hashem. That's the only thing that's available to us. Doing anything else, being creative and making new types of worship of God, is Avodah Zarah, unauthorized worship of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and is biblically forbidden, and is the form of idolatry. Hashem said to Moshe, if Klal Yisrael learns this, and actually demonstrates the learning of this, so lofty kedivarecha. So Chazal said, therefore, the whole Mishkan that was made, Kasher Tziva Hashem es Moshe, was a kapara for the head of the Edel Azov. It was only done the way Hashem wanted it, and Bezal didn't add anything else despite his brilliance. And the only way to know Kasher Tziva Hashem es Moshe is what the Kruvim taught us on the golden Aron HaKodesh, looking down into the contents of the Aron, that when you study Torah Shevetzav and Torah Shevabeh, contained in the heart of the Aron HaKodesh, if that's the means and mechanisms that you learn the mitzvahs and avodas Hashem is supposed to do, then whatever you will do, be Kasher Tziva Hashem es Moshe, you'll never come to sit with an Egel Azov again, and the kapara of the Egel Azov will be totally complete. If that's the case, and this is the way this lady feels, is Torah Lamito, Klal Yisrael were not portrayed appropriately as being all idolatrous and forgetting Hashem. All the six questions I pose disappear. The only ones who meant idolatry lavish were the Eidavav, and they were killed by the Bnei Levi, as the Torah gives Eidus, 3,000 people. But the millions and millions of men, women, and children who stood at Sinai, who did everything with Hashem Shemayim, but they were mistaken about how you do it. Hashem says, Salati kedvarecha, ki amucha, agulich agadol hazeh, realize where we come from, realize who we are, realize that for thousands of years, the Bessar of Sinai was given down to us, ish mi piyish. We have Eidus going back thousands of years to Har Sinai and to the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kliyas Yansuf, that what the Torah says is emes lamito, is 100%. And when Korach challenged Moshe in the Midbar later on, what happened? And he was swallowed into the earth. The Gemara tells us that one day a Gadol was traveling in the Midbar, and he wanted to know where the swallowing up of Korach Hadassa took place. And the Arab took him to that location, the Gemara says. And the Arab says, you see, there's smoke emanating from this hole in the sand. Listen carefully what's going on over there. And what this Chacham heard is the following statement being made by Korach Hadassa, still burning in Gehenna. The smoke's coming out. What did they say? Moshe emes. We learned our lesson. We made a mistake. Everything Hashem told Moshe, Moshe told us, is emes le'amito. Everything he didn't tell us to do is kashet tziv Hashem es Moshe. We have to remember this, my dear Tamidim Tamidos. Don't let the different types of cults of Judaism developing today, claiming their modern forms of orthodoxy, making new rituals, new halachas, new yisodos, and worshiping Hashem, that were never performed before and are prohibited according to halacha. What is told to us, Al Titash Teres Imecha, my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, who is the namesake of his Zayda the Beis Halevi, was makbid not only on Daraisis and Darabanans, but he was makbid in Minig of Yisrael, Al Titash Teres Imecha. Whenever we have a Mesores on all levels, it has to be Kashat Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, if we keep that in mind, and we understand what this is all about, and understand what happened in the Midbar, we now have a true with all people who taught us about the Chet of the Egal. We can now tell them, you don't understand what actually took place. We have a Yishev Adas and a Omai, understanding the Lashem Shemaim of Klal Yisrael at large and Aaron HaKohen. And we can therefore understand what Klal Yisrael and its indestructibility is high to Kayim Av HaYilim Azer, as long as Klal Yisrael continues through Torah to do Kashat Tzivas and Moshe, we are promised with indestructibility forever, whereas Am HaNivcho LeOlam Vaed, let us be Zaycha to be Kavol, Pnei HaMashiach, to be Zaycha to say Tchias HaMesim, and say all the Gedolim of yesteryear coming back, to reaffirm everything I'm telling you now, and let's result of his Mashiach Sikeno and the ultimate Geula taking place.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.